Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 128 for December 1st, 2011. Get the LED out and the LED in. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, thanks for joining us here, folks, for Autoline After Hours. And especially, it's good to see you, Peter. Man, I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. It's so good to have you back here.
It's been a while, John.
Yeah.
And absolutely nothing is happening.
Oh.
So it's going to be a short show tonight.
It's going to be a short show. See you, folks.
Yeah. There's zero happening in the business.
Well, actually, there's a ton of stuff happening in the business. We just got car sales today for the American market for the month of November. And pretty damn good car sales.
Yeah, it's looking up. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. In the new normal today, according to Ward's, the annualized rate, the SAR, is 13.6. That's the highest we've seen in quite a while.
Yeah. And the boys and girls in Auburn Hills are thankful they have Jeep.
Boy, are they ever, man. They had, I think their sales were up 40% for the month. And again, I'm using the Ward's numbers, and they do daily selling rates. So,
yeah.
You know, because this past November didn't have as many days as last November or vice versa, but whatever, they work it out on a daily selling rate basis. And yeah, Jeep had a phenomenal month.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a great product, and they've got incentives, and you know.
It's selling, but I'll tell you, percentage-wise, Volkswagen did even better. I think they were up 60%,
yeah,
something
that,
like that.
That's just,
just
amazing.
Amazing jump in sales. And I'm sure, to the chagrin of everybody that is in the environmental area, even though the Prius had a pretty good month, the big increase, like you said, it was Jeeps, it was Sport Utes, it was pickup trucks. They
yep.
all did pretty well.
Yep. You can't legislate people's buying habits. You just can't. I mean, they want to. They want to create this beautiful green cloud where everything is wonderful. And we emit no emissions, and it's all wonderful. And all our companies make money because they hug each other. And it's bullshit, you know that. I mean, the bottom line is if people wanted the cars, they'd go out and get them, but only a few people do.
Uh-huh.
The rest of people who have things to do and places to go, the other types of vehicles fit their needs. And, you know, Washington and the Northern California politicians have to get out of this mindset that they're going to tell people what they're going to buy. As soon as they get over that, we'll all be better off. Then we can address more.
Don't count on that.
Yeah.
That ain't going to happen.
We can address more pressing issues like the hysteria over the Volt batteries.
Yeah, that I still say I don't think we got the full story on that yet.
No, but here's the deal. In what we have become, this 24/7 instant communication, just all the time, download, never stops. You know, the problem, and I put this on the site, the problem is the lead on your little news page and on your computer and on, you know, CNBC or whatever, is Volt catches fire. Volt catch fire. Volts catch fire. That's it. You know, no explanation of, well, this was in tests. Also, there was, you know, in horrific bad accidents, yes. The batteries, if they're not drained of their juice, could heat up and catch fire.
Yeah, and for anybody who hasn't heard the story, NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration crash tested a Volt 3 weeks later in the boneyard. The car caught fire.
Yeah.
And so the headlines, like you were saying, is, oh, you know, Volt catches fire. But here's my question. GM says, you know, well, we hadn't given NHTSA our safety protocols of what to do with a battery that's been damaged. And I'm going, doesn't NHTSA have its own safety protocols? I mean, aren't they the guys who are supposed to be writing safety legislation or regulation? They're not dumb. So anyway, I asked GM, didn't NHTSA have safety protocols? And they go, we can't comment on that. You'll have to call NHTSA. So I did. And I asked NHTSA, didn't you guys have a safety protocol? And they go, we're not commenting on that. Just read our release, because we're not commenting on it. And that's why I'm saying there's more to the story than what's come out so far.
Yeah, and, you know, I had a reader who has a Z06 and a CTS-V, and he and his wife got a Volt, my buddy in Mustang, Oklahoma. And he told me that his wife was going to took the Volt to work, and she's gone out with a coworker, and the woman said, well, are you sure we should take the Volt? And she said, well, yeah, why not? I said, well, they catch fire. I mean, that's how this has progressed. Now, GM's PR troops, led by Selim Bingo. Hi, Selim. How you doing, man? You know, they're trying to get a classic PR disaster. You know, let's get ahead of this. Let's get ahead of this. Let's get ahead. So they have the big press conference. But I'm wondering if they're trying to get, if they're too far ahead of this.
I think they're dredging up the story.
First, Dan Akerson says, well, we might have to address some battery issues. Off the cuff, he says that.
Uh-huh.
Then, late today, they say, well, if anyone's unhappy with their Volt, we'll buy it back.
And in another interview, he said, you know, we might end up redesigning these things. I mean, they should have kept their mouth shut to a certain degree. Now, I understand you've got to address this issue.
Yeah, you got to address.
You got to explain to the media what's going on. But when you say, well, we're not going to comment on NHTSA's safety protocols, and when NHTSA says we're not going to comment on our own safety protocols, I'm going, what's going on here? Yeah. Why will they not comment on that? As a journalist, I got to go, whenever ever somebody tries to hide something, there's a story behind it.
And did I hear correctly they crash-tested battery packs out of the car?
Correct.
What was the point of that exactly?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, really, what is the point of that?
I can see where, you know, you want to test everything and find out what causes these batteries to fail. How do they fail? You know, how do you handle it and all that stuff? But the other stories are saying, by the way, the Leafs don't have this problem, and the Teslas don't have this problem. But have they tested their batteries outside of the car? That we don't know yet.
So what are you supposed to do? You take your cell phone battery out of your cell phone and beat it with a hammer? What,
right.
What is that? I don't get it. Speaking of not all as well in environmental land,
battery electric land.
Battery electric land. A123 had to lay off some people because Fisker...
Hundreds of people because Fisker...
is having issues, serious issues, production and payment issues. Not good.
That's why we, the taxpayers, gave them $500 million.
Yeah.
Because they've never built a car before.
Let's remind everyone that Joe Biden got his pork going on for the old Saturn Sky Pontiac Solstice plant, right?
That's correct. In Newark, Delaware.
Yes.
Joe's home state. He made sure that Fisker bought that money. Al Gore, who sits on the board of Fisker, made sure they got the $500 million in the first place.
Yeah, $468 million on a company that hadn't produced anything.
Ever.
Ever.
It's nice to have connections.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And then Carlos Ghosn at the Tokyo Auto Show yesterday tells the media that everyone's going to go out and buy electrics. Why? Because of global warming.
And the natural disasters. It's just like, what?
Right. Well, you know, I did a piece on Autoline Daily.
Yeah, it was
today.
Great, as you pointed out. If hurricane's 400 miles wide and you get in your electric car, and guess what? You can only go about 80 miles. Then what?
Then what? And if the power grid's knocked out, you know, were you going to get the juice to move your electric car? Now, other people have said, well, you know, the gas pumps at the gas stations are out. Well, yeah, but, you know, I can usually get far enough away to where there still is electricity to get gas in my car and keep on going. And, by the way, if I find some gas, I can fill the tank in 5 minutes. I don't have to sit there for hours trying to recharge it.
Well, it was nonsensical, to say the least. But Carlos is all in the full electric. I mean, he is all in. And if it doesn't work out, I don't know.
Well, you know, here's what I say is when you look at hybrid sales, they're only 2% of the market. But half of all hybrid sales are the Toyota Prius. The Toyota Prius, unquestionably, is a resounding success.
Yes.
I think Carlos Ghosn's plan is, I want the Leaf to become the Prius of electrics. So even if the whole market doesn't go anywhere, the Leaf will sell in enough volume that we make money on it. I think that's got to be his plan. But like you say, he's all in. They have, between them and Renault, they've got plants in Japan, the United States, and Europe, battery plants in each of those locations, too. And they have a lot of volume, a lot of volume. So they've tooled up for that with billions in government subsidies from all around the world. But I don't know. I'm still not convinced electrics are going to sell in big numbers.
Not this decade. Not this decade. Yeah.
Hey, some other moves, too, amongst people in the industry. Laura Suave out at Fiat. I'm sure that didn't surprise you.
No, I mean, she was almost set up to fail by the way Marchionne insisted that all these dealers have separate showrooms. Well, by insisting that, they couldn't do a proper rollout of, you know, they kept waiting. Well, we need more dealers, we need more dealers. And there was no proper launch. And, you know, I had some Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge dealers write me and say, you know what, that whole exclusive Fiat dealer thing before they had any cars was the dumbest move of the year. And if he had just said, yeah, every Chrysler dealer can sell a Fiat, he might have actually met half his target. But because he didn't, so, you know, she was set up to fail. She also made some egregious errors on her own, but there was no question that wasn't a long story.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't surprise me that Laura Suave's out. I feel sorry for her because I think the sales target she was given of 50,000 cars
ridiculous.
Was never going
with
to happen.
With no money and no proper dealer organization and fits and starts of getting the cars out. And it was just, you know, it was a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then another move with a very high-level woman executive, Susan Doherty, who had been at GM of China.
Shanghai.
Is moving to Europe to run Chevrolet of Europe. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, GM, there's another. GM's all in Europe. I mean, they're absolutely committed to make it work. I mean, they've got Gursky over there on the Opel board, right?
Right, right.
And now Susan's over there to make Chevy work.
But I think Chevy's working anyway. Opel's the big problem for General Motors in Europe.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Chevy's actually working. I mean, Chevy needs to be ramped up, you know.
I would agree with that. What I was referring to is it's rate of sales growth has been impressive.
Yeah, Opel is a huge issue.
Opel's a huge issue. And I still don't get the strategy of bringing Chevrolet in, which is gobbling up market share, while you've got Opel. Why didn't you just stick with Opel? It's clearly the brand strategy at General Motors still hasn't really worked its way out.
Well, the globalization of the Chevy brand, I'm not convinced is a good thing. Or necessary.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they're going to ram that Chevy gold bow tie down everyone's throats, and it's going to work in some countries, and in other countries it's going to be ho-hum, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the reason that Susan's going over there is, you know, they got to stir it up and make it happen.
Well, I can't remember off the top of my head. I want to say they do roughly 500,000 cars, just over 500,000 Chevrolets in Europe. So, yeah, their goal has got to be to double it minimum.
Yeah, yeah. So,
because one of the reasons they got to do that is, you know, Chevrolet in Europe is essentially Daewoo cars. We're not talking, you know, Camaros and Suburbans and things like that. We're talking stuff out of Korea.
Yeah.
And, boy, everybody should be worried about Hyundai, Kia. Oh, in fact, you know, going back to the sales for the minute, for the moment in November sales, Hyundai, Kia outsold both Honda and Nissan.
That's probably a good time to take our first commercial break.
Huh? Yeah, right. Why don't we do that? Hey, Ben, let's thank our friends at Bridgestone for sponsoring this show.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again, and promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
I was just talking about Carlos Ghosn when what he was saying to the media at the Tokyo Auto Show. There were some cool cars that came out of the Tokyo show.
Yeah, there were. There were some, you know, typical oddities, too.
Well, that's the fun part of that show.
What was that? Was it Toyota that did the, like, the basically the moving cell phone?
Was that Toyota or was that Honda?
Was the whole side of it.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that a Toyota?
Boy, we reported on so many of those cars. I need them out in front of me right now
to
know for sure.
But the whole body, this body side was a like an LCD, like a screen.
Right. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, there was some cool stuff there.
Volkswagen had what looked like a baby Tiguan there, too, that I thought looked sensational.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is, to me, the hottest segment going, the small crossover thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have the new Ford Escape in this market, which I think is going to be blistering hot once it hits.
Looks dynamite.
And, you know, Volkswagen isn't going to take that laying down. Obviously, they signaled in it. It's a great-looking car. Does it have as much headroom as the old Tiguan and all that? No. But people are buying these things.
Well, it...
All you have to do is look at that new the Range Rover Evoque. Mm-hmm. You know, that set the tone for this. And now we're seeing a lot of... That's where everything's going. These small crossovers, but stylish crossovers.
Right. And we saw some pretty good styling coming out of Honda, too, with one of their concept cars, which allegedly is going to influence the next Accord.
Yeah, but they're in deep trouble in the U.S. I mean, they have got no mojo.
No, it's true. Like I said, Hyundai Kia outsold them. Accord did not have a very good month. You know, contrast that to Toyota. Toyota is coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are the 800-pound gorilla.
Well, they have a tremendous dealer network, and they're not going to be down for long. But it's time to start being concerned about Honda.
I agree. And we've been talking about that on this show for several years now.
Yeah, yeah.
Toyota also showed a fuel cell car, and kind of cool-looking car. And it's amazing to me to see how Toyota, General Motors, Daimler, Hyundai, Honda keep pushing fuel cells. And they all say they're going to have them in the showrooms by 2015. I'm not sure for what.
Well, yeah.
Where am I going to get my hydrogen?
Yeah, that's even worse than charging up your electric car at the local, 7-Eleven. I mean, when is that going to happen?
One of my friends in the industry sent me an email today, and I will not divulge his name because he may not want this because some of their people, it's like an independent consultancy, had a meeting with the Honda people last week in Tokyo. And the Honda people told them that the two fuel cell cars equal the price of one Honda Jet. And I think that puts it in perspective.
Yikes.
As to that is expensive.
Oh, man. Well, we knew that. I mean, I don't know how it's going to happen, you know. But, you know, Mercedes is right there, too. Oh, yeah, we're going to do the fuel cell thing. I mean, I heard that the tanks alone, the onboard storage tanks alone, were like $40,000 or $50,000.
I don't know the price, but it's got to be expensive.
Because of the construction and all that.
Yeah, because you're putting this hydrogen in under enormously high pressure. I mean, you literally have to design a fuel tank that'll store hydrogen that you can shoot a machine gun at and have the bullets bounce off.
But that Honda Jet's cool now that you mention it.
No, it is. It's really cool.
And they start making them.
Well, you know, Honda, that's why we always loved them for so long, is they did really cool stuff. But, yeah. Man, you look at their cars these days, and they're on the bottom rung.
And here's a company that did one of the sweetest, you know, modern-day, affordable, all-around sports cars in the S2000. Uh-huh. And they didn't follow it up. And who is following it up? Subaru and Toyota with their joint venture.
Right.
Now, I think the mistake is they both kind of look identical. Which
they do.
Is
the kinda, FRS and the BRZ.
Yeah, and that's kind of weird.
Well, it, not only is it weird, I hope the two of them divvy up markets around the world. And, you know, you get this one, I get that one. You get that one, I get this one. Because to sell the same car in the same markets, I don't think that's going to work very well for them. Because we know that those segments aren't very big to begin with.
Well, I think Subaru should skip the U.S. with it because...
doesn't fit their image.
No, it doesn't fit their image. I mean, you know...
Not in the U.S.
Not in the U.S. And leave the U.S. to Toyota. But you know that's not going to happen.
No. Yep. No, not going to happen. Hey, this is probably a good time to bring on our guest for today, Michael Pickholtz. Michael, come on up and join us here. And I think you people get a kick out of meeting Michael. I've known him for a number of years now.
Put your mic on.
Yeah, you got to put your own mic on here. We don't have staff to do that. You got to do it yourself.
We have Ike, but Ike doesn't cooperate. Yeah. Right. Right, Ikey?
Ike the dog only adds ambiance. He doesn't do any work, except for bark at people when they come in the door. But Michael, my understanding is, even though I've known you for years, I'm going to describe you as an engineer and an inventor, freelance engineer and inventor. Is that fair enough?
For the last 8 years, yes, indeed.
So you worked in the industry, though?
Correct. I've been in the industry 30 years. Exactly.
Car company and supplier?
Correct.
Which car companies were you?
I started with Ford.
Uh-huh.
That's what brought me to Michigan from New Jersey.
Right. From New Jersey, but that's not a New Jersey accent. Where are you from?
Oh, it's not a Jersey accent. I lived in South America as well as in Europe before I came to the States when I was 14.
Uh-huh.
So it's a mixture of French and Spanish.
Cool. And what got you into cars?
Just there's a picture of me as a little boy just checking my father's DKW, believe it or not.
You guys had a DKW?
My father had...
Oh, my God. Those are Auto Unions.
Auto Unions.
Which everybody who should know will know that that's the predecessor to Audi.
Correct. And, of course, I only know this from pictures, not from remembering. It was way too small. But there I am as a little toddler just checking the wheels out and the stories that came with a car, which wasn't good enough to climb most hills. It was a two-stroke. And the stories abound in the family, those experiences.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so what, you design and engineer anything, or what do you specialize in?
My main area of activity, well, I've been involved in a number of areas, but I concentrate mainly on LED lighting. Mm-hmm. I've been in lighting for 20-plus years.
And LED's the hot thing right
LED
now.
LED is the hot thing. And a few years back, I realized that LED was it. And I said, okay, time to drop everything else and concentrate on that topic.
And now you've designed, what, an LED headlamp for cars that uses magnesium housing, right?
Correct. It's just the headlamp is the first product. It's really a technology and approach to utilize magnesium instead of plastic because LEDs need to be cooled. And if you don't cool them...
Explain that, because most people think, oh, LED, it's not hot to the
correct.
Touch.
LEDs are like... Think of it like a laptop, any kind of electronic device. Like you have a laptop or a computer that have fans to cool them, and you can feel the hot air coming out of it. LEDs is the same thing. Even though they're more efficient than light bulbs, most of the energy goes into them comes out as heat. Hmm. Except it doesn't come out the front, like in a light bulb. It doesn't get hot. But at the back, it will burn you. The issue is not that they get as hot as a light bulb. It's that they get hot enough to self-destruct. So if you don't keep them cool... They begin to wear out, I mean, to degrade and fail.
So you had showed me an exploded schematic of the LED headlamps that Audi's using, and there's literally little fans inside those headlamps.
Correct. Most of the OEM, I mean, production headlamps right now are fan-cooled. They're internal fans moving air around and all sorts of complex gobbledygook. technological treats.
Well, no wonder they're so expensive to fix.
Right. So what do you think LED headlamp on an Audi costs, like on an A8?
I don't have an exact pricing, but I heard north of $1,300 or even maybe over $1,800 each.
Jeez! That's a lot of money for headlamps.
All I can tell you is that I know that the Lexus 600H, LS600H, the dealer wants like $5,000 each.
I'm sure the insurance companies love that.
What do you think of the BMW announcement about laser headlights?
Oh, I think it's like anything else. It's something way into the future. Who wants to talk about LED when you can talk about laser?
Frickin' giant lasers.
Yeah, of course. All I've heard through the grapevine is that there's one thing you can assign to it is the word expensive.
Right.
Or hyper expensive. It may work, but
I mean, is it technologically feasible?
I think it's technologically feasible, but I don't know if it's any way close to production feasible.
So, I mean, you would have literally laser beams shooting out the headlamps of the car?
I haven't read enough, but I thought they were indirectly shot.
Well, the bouncing of mirrors and the like. And there's no argument you can make enough energy out of it. But the question is, how do you make it work in the real world?
And control it.
Yes. And as you know, one of the big gripes, like HID, never mind LED headlamps, is that they're so many of them were so small, and the eye perceives that as a lot of glare because you're concentrating all that energy in a very small spot.
Hmm.
If you get them to a point source, what is that going to be like? I don't know. I can only imagine.
So go back to your design for your LED headlamps, because not only are you using magnesium, because it can take the heat, right?
Well, the reason for the issue is this. Most headlights are made out of plastic. So that's the material of record. The problem is when you start going to LED, you have to cool them. Plastic is an insulator. So now you're running into a little problem. How do you cool? By putting insulation. It works backwards. So they're putting in metal pieces inside the headlamp, which is further adding cost. And that's what the fan directs air around all these little radiators, if you will, inside. And think of like little VW engines, air-cooled VW engines in there. So with all that complexity, so what if you could, instead of trying to make a plastic work, find an alternative? It turns out there is a process that was invented here in Michigan by Dow, I don't know exactly, maybe in the 70s, which is magnesium injection molding. And that was...
Explain. I've never heard that. Magnesium injection molding.
Yes. Again, it was developed here in Michigan, taken over by a Michigan company, promoted for many years. It's been around for over 20 years because the patents have expired on the process.
And what's that process called?
Thixoforming.
Thixoforming.
Yeah, and that funny word comes from... now we get into technical stuff. It means the in-between state between solid and liquid.
Hmm. So solid, not quite liquid?
Exactly. It's a thixotropic. That's where it comes from. So it means that you have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And most metals exhibit that tendency, except they're not all the same. So some go from one to the other like that. So you cannot control it. Magnesium, on the other hand, a number of things are low enough temperature to get it to that. It's therefore, what they find out, to make a long story short, is that they could actually, when they mixed it, they made it in such a way that they could work in an injection molding machine, which is a derivative of what you use for plastic. So the injection molding process not only is like, but it's almost identical with obviously many technical changes in order to process magnesium. But in essence, you pour magnesium pellets or flakes into the machine and it comes apart, just like plastic.
And you want injection molding because then you can have very good precision in what you're injecting or molding.
And to most people that won't know what's made from that, if you have an iPhone or iPad, you're holding magnesium injection molding device, that the frame is made from magnesium. And also I'm not that versed on it, but laptops are, most of them have gone into magnesium housings.
So I'm curious. Here you're working on LED headlamps, which is the hottest thing in lighting now, until we get to lasers. You want to make the housing out of magnesium.
Correct.
You want to use this unique injection molding process to make it.
Correct.
In a process, by the way, that was developed in Michigan. What's it like trying to take this idea of yours to the auto industry?
It feels like the old saying is that when you stop hitting your head against the wall, maybe it stops hurting. You know, it feels that way. It feels like that's what I'm doing. It has not been easy.
Is that true of everything that you've worked on?
Yes.
It's just a hard industry to get into.
The industry is geared towards large suppliers, and that's what they want to see. Whether it's the right strategy or not, it doesn't matter. It's the way that the industry still perceives that they need huge suppliers to support their needs. And just go away. Just bring it to us in a different avenue. The problem is if you try to do that, what do? You go to a company's established and you tell them that you know better than them?
Invented here.
Yeah.
Let me add my own moniker to that. In addition to NIH, not invented here, I have one which is called NIBM, which stands for not invented by me. So when you walk into a company and say, let me talk to my technical expert. Well, what happens? I said, forget your plastic. I use magnesium. Uh-oh. You're an outside interloper. You bring in something they know nothing about. Therefore, you need to be disposed of. That's the way I feel. That's the reality of it.
I want to get more into this and have you compare working with, like, the European automakers and the American automakers and the differences in that. But let's take a quick commercial break here. Ben, let's thank our friends at Chevrolet for sponsoring this show. The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm. And a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStart turn-by-turn directions free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise. Michael, you have worked with American automakers, sure. European automakers. You're trying to bring new technology to the industry. You're in the trenches. Tell us what it's like in terms of the difference between working with the Europeans versus the Americans.
Well, my experience has been mainly bringing European technologies to the States. So, obviously, an interface back and forth. And that's what got me into lighting. It was something that I liked. I wanted to see at night. I knew that European headlights were better back in the 70s and 80s, and that's how I got involved with a European lighting company that had no presence here, and they were advanced. In those days, they were doing optical lamps, and now we see projector lamps, and they were in the cutting edge. So I said, well, let me give it a shot. That was my first foray into entrepreneurship. I brought them to this market. I managed to get a number of programs at Chrysler, the four programs, and unfortunately then the life of an entrepreneur teaches you that things don't always turn out the way you hope, and then we part a company. But then I remained in the business. So it's the U.S. usually lags behind in terms of technology because they don't want to be the first. But eventually, like for what's happening around with LED, what happens? Audi comes in, it puts all these LED features, and everybody else looks at, have to have it. So my call for that is the Audi curse. Because they basically have driven the market to now follow suit and incorporate those features. Never mind the energy-saving aspects, because I don't see that yet in automobiles. LEDs are not put in there for energy saving. They're put in there for styling.
Right? Because they keep talking about how efficient
the releases,
they are, right?
Yeah, we're saving energy.
When you have 76 LEDs, like on the front of an Audi A8 or 71 or so in the CLS Mercedes, that's not for energy savings. That's for...
That's for parade float.
Yeah. And function. I mean, that's a function to it. I'm not turning it down. They're great products. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not to bring any of those products down. They have their place in the market. The question is, can you actually bring the cost of LED to where mainstream vehicles can take advantage and bring in the two things, LED energy efficiency and second weight, which is one of the attributes of magnesium. It's the lightest of all metals that you can do something with in terms of structures and the like.
And you had pointed out to me, too, even though magnesium's more expensive, you can use less of it.
Correct, because being lighter, if you price it by the pound, you're going to use less material, one-third less material to make the same exact part. So, therefore, you have to take, roughly speaking, a third off the cost per pound to compare to aluminum, for instance. And it is, being one-third lighter, you can make the same part lighter. And if you use the injection molding process, you can even go better because you can make a thinner net shape that, I mean, if you look at the tablet, the iPad there, that's extremely thin, very accurate, good-looking, rugged. So there is enough evidence that it works. Unfortunately, as I was indicating, even though the process was invented in Michigan and it's been around for so long, there's two machines in Michigan.
And the rest of the machines are out of this country pretty
well,
much?
Well, there's a number of them in the States, but the bulk of them are in China and Japan and Taiwan. Hmm. That's who has it. The electronics industry has adopted this en masse. But when you tell people here that you can do this, I might as well walk in there with three eyes in my head. Maybe I do. I don't know. You know.
Have you seen a change in the last few years? Because with the big collapse, as I say it, we almost have a new auto industry in
right.
Detroit. And when I look at, say, like Ford with EcoBoost, when I look at the things that's being done with infotainment and in-car communication, mm-hmm. I would say the Detroit 3 are the ones who are leading the technological charge now in certain aspects. Have you seen a change in how you want to bring your ideas to market?
Only very lately. I mean, only I'm beginning to see a little bit of that lately because before, that was just not registering. Just couldn't get anybody to pay attention. But I'm seeing a little bit of that.
Is it because of the fuel economy regulations? I mean, if you can bring something that's lighter weight, they got to be interested now.
I think it's coming. I think that, as you indicated, like Ford brought up EcoBoost, which is a fantastic innovation. It works. It delivers the goods. The issue is going to be what happens after EcoBoost. Where does let's pick Ford. Where do they go next? And every report I've seen indicates that the next thing is mass weight. Take it out.
Right, because in a couple of years' time, EcoBoost is going to be in everything. To your point, now what's the next
right.
rabbit you pull out of the hat?
And I think that's where the energy savings of LED, potential energy savings, not the bling side, or the safety side and all that. I mean, there are some very good things to be said for the headlights out there. They do a lot of good things, but at a cost. So the question is, can you bring LED down to where it becomes useful? Like, for instance, look at the Chevy Volt. I mean, outside the battery, it has a halogen headlight, not the LED you see on is the daytime running light like anything else out there. But the headlight itself is halogen. So I would think, wouldn't a vehicle like that benefit from a lower power consumption instead of 63 watts and a half or whatever, down to maybe under 20, 17 and a half, which is nominal.
And I think that's a good point that you're making because we're seeing a lot of cars these days with LEDs, but they're more decorative. They're not the actual projector beam.
Correct. The daytime running light has become, well, it's not required in the States. It's a safety attribute. Some countries require it, like, for instance, Canada, Norway, and other European countries. In the States, it's an option. You can if you want to. You don't if you don't. And nobody's going to complain. I mean, the government will let you do it. But it's now being perceived precisely because it's a styling feature. So we put in a styling feature. It's a safety attribute. So you make something out of, you know, I won't call lemonade out of lemons, but you kind of put a slant into it that's a positive.
But like you said, mass reduction is where the industry is going right now. In fact, you know, Mazda, for example, is talking about its Sky Active technology. Well, a key component of that is mass reduction.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's the final frontier to get the mileage.
Get the weight out.
It's the only thing you can do because you really have two options. Either you make the car smaller to get the mass out, which is, to your earlier points, we're in the States, not somewhere else. I mean, the tiny little cars have an issue in this market. Or you make something that's sized for American needs and tastes and make it so that it gets the efficiency that we need.
But at an affordable cost.
Indeed. That's
the trick.
How do you balance all those requirements, the government fuel economy requirements, and what the customer wants? Because the point that you made earlier is absolutely correct. You can't legislate what people want.
If you go back to the late 70s and early 80s, this was the exact same discussion.
Correct.
That's when CAFE first came in, and this town was panicked over it. And at the time, I remember General Motors got to the point where if you were an engineer and if you could take a pound out of a component, they would let you and your spouse fly anywhere for a long weekend, all expenses paid.
I'll take that.
And then and then later on, it came down to, as a supplier, if you could take a pound out of whatever you were supplying, they would let you charge another dollar for it. And that may not sound like much to people, but this is an industry where they fight over tenths of a penny, not
right.
tenths of a dollar. So
right.
to get a whole dollar, that's massively huge. Where are we at right now?
My understanding is that GM has assigned a $5 per kilogram or something thereabouts cost. So kilogram being 2.2 pounds.
Right. So $5 for a supplier. That's massive pricing power.
Yeah, whether it's accurate or not, it now has established a metric where now you say there's value to weight or lack of thereof. So more weight, less value, less weight, more value.
Okay, so here you're this independent guy. What would be your advice or message to the car companies in terms of trying to bring new technology into their cars?
I don't know if I could really have any advice. I think it would be, I know many people like are doing what I'm doing, and they're having a very hard time. I think it would behoove them to have a mentoring program or some way. I mean, there's a few things around. Like, for instance, SAE and MIT have an annual competition.
Oh, we should, an annual competition, which you just won for your headlamp design.
One of the two winners. There were two winners, and I was one of the two. And so that's helpful. GM provides some sponsorship, but we're talking about very small baby steps. And you have to do a lot on your own. So it's almost like you have to be touching the head, so basically reflect on how I feel about myself to do this, because it's not easy.
So you'd like to see the car companies do mentoring programs to help independents like yourself bring ideas into the company?
I don't know if I would say so far it would not hurt them. On the contrary, it would be very useful to, I think, universities, other means to spur creativity, because it's good to talk about entrepreneurship, but if you cannot afford to do it, if you go broke in the process, you're not going to get there. And there's a lot of very good ideas and a lot of very good people who could do wonders. I mean, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about people I know and people I don't know. But I know that most of them are, well, you have family, you have responsibilities. What are you going to do, gamble everything? Then the economy is not good. That even makes people get back into their shell. So I'm too far gone. That's my problem. But it's not easy.
Very interesting advice for the car companies there.
It may not be a bad idea. I didn't think on those terms, but now you bring it up, it would not hurt to have, like I said, and also, as you know, like electric cars and things like that, that they're putting so much resources because there's really no pool of trained individuals. You can just simply grab and put there. So you have getting back to lighting, there's no university programs that I know of that are creating lighting engineers. Yet the industry is saying that they will need 50% more people in the next 5 years due to LED. Yet my understanding is that in the next 5 years we may see 20% less through attrition, through retirements. So one curve is going, the need is going this way, and the demand is, I mean, the availability is going that way. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, sure will be. Well, fascinating discussion, and I think we ought to take another commercial break and get to rapid fire and hear what the audience wants to us to talk about. Ben, let's thank our good friends at Hyundai for sponsoring this program. The sixth generation of the Hyundai Sonata is taking the industry by storm, and no wonder. It offers a fluidic design theme that gives it a strikingly modern, coupe-like exterior design, and yet the interior provides the roominess of a full-size car as measured by the EPA. The Sonata also provides an eco-friendly interior with soy-based foam for the seats. Put it all together with Hyundai's strong reliability and value proposition, and you've got yourself a really compelling package. Check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com. Okay, Michael, you should probably know this is the rapid-fire part of the show where we take questions from the audience. And Ben, let's let it roll. Okay, Mario Paredes says, since Chrysler has yet to reveal the name of its new compact car that's coming soon, what would be your choice, Peter? Dodge Dart, Dodge Duster, Dodge Neon, or use the current Dodge Caliber name? And he says that because you've mentioned before that using a new name is very expensive.
Yeah, Caliber I don't think is so great. I've heard heard Hornet.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard Hornet.
Hornet would be, that could work.
Yeah. I like Dodge Dart, but I suspect they'll go with something like Hornet.
Mm-hmm. But use a name from the past.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Mike D. White says, is it true that car sales are being driven by people replacing old vehicles? If so, does the fun end when all the cars are replaced?
We got a long way to go.
Yeah,
to
look, there's 250 million cars in the United States right now, and we're running at, what, 13, a little over 13, hopefully, rate. Going to take a long time to replace them. And by the way, once you get a few years down the road, then they've got to be replaced. So, yeah, it's true. People are replacing old vehicles. I keep saying, thank God they got the money to go buy new ones. I think that's the positive aspect of it all.
Little glimmers of hope about the economy. Just little.
Little glimmers. Like car sales.
Yeah.
Brian wants to know. He says, do you really see F1 happening in Austin, Texas?
Bernie has given the organizers, which I thought was
generous, magnanimous
on the little billionaire's part, but he's given them another week. And, you know, if they can get it together, I think he'll stand by his word. But I don't
think they're going to come up with the money. I think the city of Austin is going to kick itself. You know, that was a big issue. Why should we be laying off teachers and give all this money to build a Formula One racetrack?
Well, the crushing thing was the woman at the state was going to give them the $25 million that Bernie demanded, that says the race is on. And she changed her mind and said, this isn't looking good. I'm not giving you the $25
million. Yowza.
And once she said that,
the whole thing fell apart?
Yeah. Yep. So,
What about this track in the Palisades in New Jersey across the river from New York?
That's heavily funded, and believe me, that will go.
Uh-huh.
That's going to go, and that's probably going to be a success. That's
going to be Monaco on the Hudson, right?
Well, the track.
I never thought of it that way.
The track
is
really cool.
It's really cool. A lot of elevation change. I mean, big elevation.
No, I mean in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah, correct. In New Jersey too.
Yeah, yeah.
It is.
No. That's what I mean. Elevation change in that one, right?
Because Austin has tremendous elevation change.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm already talking about it in the past tense.
Yeah. Well, I hope they do it, but it doesn't look good.
Jim wants to know, I know it's another Saab question, he says, but what are the few dealers doing for OE parts? You know, they're still selling in this country around 300 cars a month. I'm astonished they're even getting that much out. There's got to be parts around. I mean, by law, you got to do it. But it's a good question. I don't know.
What about the SUV? Is GM building it?
Haven't they pulled the plug on that?
I think they've pulled the plug. There was a report out of China yesterday saying that GM has nixed the deal between Saab and the Chinese distributor. So, as I've been saying for some time, I think some of those
Saab crossovers, you know, based on the SRX, are going to be like the rarest vehicles on the planet.
Absolutely,
right. Build a few of those?
Yeah, I think they've sold. Yeah. Haven't they sold like 300 of them or something?
A little bit more than that, right, but not a whole lot. Hey, we've got some phone calls here. Ben, let's bring in the first one.
Hi there, John. This is Dan Smith from Durham, North Carolina. And I was bouncing around on the internet checking out the latest on the their version of the Toyo Baru into a latter day Porsche 968. What's the latest you have on that? I'm sure Peter's there too, so what the heck, Peter, go ahead and throw in your 2 cents worth as well. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Dan. I have no knowledge of this.
No.
Yeah. So, great question. You got us stumped there. George from Brooklyn says, please talk about the B segment sales for November. Ooh, I don't have the sales numbers right in front of me right now.
Is the 500 the B or?
Well, the Fiat 500 sales were down for the month.
That's in the B segment, right?
That's in the B segment. It went from, I think.
Well, that's the Honda Fit.
Correct.
And the Fiesta.
Right. And the Fiesta. Fiesta sales were down. Fiat 500 sales were down. Mini is running red hot. It's going just gangbusters. The Fit numbers I don't remember off the top of my head, so I can't say about that. Let's see, and also wants to know, what does the panel think of the Fiat J-Lo fiasco?
I've written extensively about it on the site. I think it's, you know, it's Olivier, I'm a genius, just ask me, Francois, grandstanding. He loves stars, and he loves to be around them, and I think she's a totally incongruous fit with the product. I mean, I just think it's a disaster every step of the way. And now they've subsequently done an ad with the Italian woman and the sport.
Well, in fact, we got a question for you on that, too. Sean Walsh wants to know, can Peter provide a translation of what the young lady in the new Fiat 500 Abarth commercial is saying?
She's basically saying, you wish and it ain't going to happen. but the car's kind of cute.
Yeah, right. Well, I thought that ad actually got closer. I don't like the ad, but it got closer to the kind of ads they should be doing.
Yeah, it got closer.
500 is this cute little iconic styling statement. And well,
see, my point about the misfire of the Fiat launches, they assume people know what Fiat is. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do enough laying the groundwork for what Fiat is, what it can be, what it will be. And, you know, they didn't set the table. And a lot of people don't understand this about advertising, but there, you know, there are rhyme and reason to some of the stuff that goes on. And they didn't set the table for the brand so that when the Fiat 500 came out, it became the flavor of the summer. And then that's it. And now the sales are, like, you know, down. And
right.
It was a misfire by Sergio. And, you know, all the Sergio acolytes just hate me for criticizing Sergio. But, hey, he blew it. But he won't admit it, and Olivier won't admit nothing. Except, I'm a genius, just ask me.
Okay, Ray Schaefer wants to know, what do you think of the new Corvette DP Racer? And will you travel to Daytona for the 50th running of the 24 Hours in January to see it run?
I wrote extensively about that. That was a sweetheart deal between GM and Jim France, who runs Grand Am. You know, GM approached Jim France, said, what do we have to do to run DPs, because we don't like your DPs. They look, and they do, they look ungodly.
Holy. They don't look good, right.
And so, you know, I'm not quoting because I don't know, but basically they said, well, why don't you help us design the rules for the next DP package? And that's what they did. And at the press conference, the first remark was, well, we've been working closely with, you know, because the media said, well, how did you get this thing built so quick? And said, well, we've been working on it for 8 months. And then about 2 minutes later, he said, well, actually, we've been working on it for 18 months, closely with GM. So if I'm a non-GM DP team, I'm saying, what? I mean, you guys wrote the rule book, you built the car, and here it is. I don't know. I got a problem with calling in a Corvette. I really do. I think it's an insult to Corvette racing they've done, you know, that's won Le Mans six times in the GT category. And, I, you know, to me, it's not a Corvette. Now, if they want to do a proper prototype to run for the overall win at the 24-hour Le Mans and call it a Corvette prototype, that's one thing. This ain't it. This is a really nice body kit that was engineered by, masterfully, I might add, by Pratt Miller. And if you don't have a DP Corvette in 2012, you aren't going to win.
Ben, we got another phone call. Let's bring that one in.
Hi, this is Ace from Road America, Wisconsin. I was wondering if the Corvette into the future needs to be split into two. Maybe one would be called the Stingray. One would be an all-out performance vehicle, money no object. The other one could be afforded by a Todd and Buzz. Thank you.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, GM, you know, GM has investigated that two Corvette strategy because there's a huge faction within the company that says, you know, we can't do a mid-engine OMG Corvette because we will immediately destroy the value proposition inherent in the Corvette, which is why the C7 is going to be yet another incremental thing. But there is also a hardcore faction with GM said, well, look, we did the ZR1, so why can't we do a 458 Italia competitor? And so what? We don't build a lot of them. We could make a lot of money doing it. So I think the argument's still valid within GM. And the question is, the C7's done, locked, toast. That's coming out. You know, we'll be seeing that. The real question is the C8. You know, now Mark Royce, you know, he's one of the car guys in the business. So Mark is going to, you know, want that C8 to be more of a technical projection of GM's capabilities. But on the other hand, he can't really go too far. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is a super Corvette available down the road for price no object, you know.
You know, I remember years ago when Don Runkel was still running advanced stuff at GM, he said, they talked about doing the very thing that you're talking about then. And I said, well, how can you afford to do it? And he says, it's easy. You don't tool it up. You just build it. So literally, you fabricate the thing so you don't have this massive tooling cost. And because you're building it in very low volume.
Well, that's what Ford did with the
GT.
The modern GT.
Right.
Correct.
So there's no reason why GM couldn't do that.
Right. Really make a statement. You think Ford will do a replacement for the GT?
Not anytime soon.
Okay.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Although that King Kong Mustang's pretty cool.
That is. Okay, JJ wants to know, is there going to be a four-wheel drive 500, maybe for the Abarth? I don't think you could do all-wheel drive in that, could you? Unless you put electric motors in the rear wheels or something, right?
Something like that, but...
Yeah, but you can't add weight to that thing. I mean, you can barely get out of its own way.
Do you really need it?
Mm-hmm. So, let's see here. Nick Diesel wants to know, any talk about Honda's electric hybrid successor to the NSX?
No, but you know what? If I'm Honda, they need something desperately, and it better be really cool, because their mojo is MIA right now.
It is. We've got another phone call here. Let's go to that one, Ben.
Hey, John, Rick from San Diego. You know, the GM's trying to sell Chevys in Europe as opposed to Opels. Good luck with that. Germany's going to be a key country in the European market, and Opel's always going to hold more market share than Chevy and going to be looked upon better. I'm not sure that's going to work out too well for them. Comments?
Well, you know, we already talked about it. I mean, their first priority is Opel. If they don't fix Opel, then they're out of business over there.
Right. Either shut it down or fix it.
Yeah.
You know, don't let this thing drag on. And as we talked about before, like you mentioned earlier in the show, Peter, sending Steve Gursky over there. And who is it? Dan Ammon, I think, is going to be on the board. And somebody else I'm blanking out on now. So I think they're getting serious. Go fix that thing. But it's going to be a battle.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big battle. Tim wants to know, is GM making any plans to have dealers actively train on Q? You know, we talked all about Q a couple of weeks ago here.
That's the new Cadillac system that shows
the touchscreen, the haptic feedback, and all that. Mm-hmm. But he wants to know, are dealers going to actively train on it so they can help customers understand Q?
Well, that's the idea. And that's, you know, all of these programs start out with noble ideas. But, you know, we all know in the day-to-day slog of the retail business, it's like, everyone's looking at their watch. Did you get that car over the curb? Is that deal done? And, you know, so injecting this, you know, educational, let's take a two-hour break so we can school you in my touch. People are like, are you kidding me? I got to get back to the office. Or, you know, so there's a giant disconnect. And people don't want to go to class to operate their automobiles. They don't. I mean, it's just human nature. It's like you get something for Christmas or you bought something, and the last thing you look at is the instructions, and only only at the last resort. So
that's the last resort.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're a technical guy, but you'll be damned if you read the directions.
Oh, I'm loath to do it, but sometimes when I'm smart, I do read them.
Yeah, but you're going to figure it out, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a giant disconnect, you know. Yeah, the queue is cool, but if you can't get in and just run it, you know, then it becomes...
If it's not intuitive, forget it, right? You don't want what we call an RTFM problem.
And, you
about
know,
going to the manual.
And the new changes to the MyTouch are really good. I mean, if you're tuned into the MyTouch, the new changes, I mean, it should be great. But, you know, a lot of people just, you know, if it takes more than 3 minutes, they're like, I don't like this.
Right.
I'm not going to do it. It's just human nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we're at the top of the hour here. It's probably a good time to wrap this up. But, Michael, it was great having you here on the show. Very, very interesting insights as to, and good advice, too. I like that mentoring idea for inventors and independent engineers.
Well, not to mention, you know, our educational system, you know, really pushing mathematics and technical engineering. And let's just hear Governor Snyder today said, we got to stop graduating kids in fields that there are no jobs in.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, I think we need engineers and all the technical fields, even also the apprenticeship programs for skilled trades.
Yeah. You know,
that's
look.
It's going away.
Look, most kids are not going to college, and we need to revive the vocational schools. And, you know, this first robotics thing where they have competition at high school level to build robots and compete is terrific. In fact, in one of the local high schools here, they reopened the shop class. They had to go in and refurbish the lathes and the mills and all that stuff because it had been sitting there for two decades unused, and now they're firing it back up, and these kids love learning this stuff.
It drove me nuts when I came to this country because I said, well, I wanted to go to college, and I said, fine. So next thing I said, what's that, all that equipment in those rooms in the back of the school? And I'm peeking through the window. I said, lathes and this and auto shop? And I asked questions. I said, oh, we didn't. No, that's not for you. So what do you mean it's not for me? I want to. Right. And I did whatever I could to get into those classes. When I was attending school in France, the school I was attending was half regular school, if you will, traditional all-American, and the other half was actually a vocational school where they taught trades. So the kids that graduated from those schools came out with solid sets of skills, and they were marketable immediately. And I think that we need that.
We need that desperately. You know, there's lots of jobs going begging right now.
Well, we can't lose the ability to make things in this country.
No question about it.
And create things, and because that's what this country did.
And that's why I like what Michael's suggesting here is a mentorship problem or a program to help that along.
Yeah, there's a need for technology and also people. I mean, as you know, even though we have such a high unemployment rate, certain areas of skill sets are, as Peter just said, you cannot find people. Either you steal them from another company, which obviously all you're doing is moving the problem from one to the other, or you can't find anybody.
So they drag retired people back and say, can you show some of our younger people how to do this?
Correct.
Which is a mentoring program.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Well, again, Michael, thanks for coming on.
Thank you,
Peter, great seeing you again.
See
it's been a couple of weeks, but it's great to be back together with you. And thank all of you for having tuned in. You can friend us at Facebook at facebook.com/AutoLineDetroit. Follow Peter's stuff at AutoExtremist.com. You can follow him on Twitter, too. Don't forget that you can subscribe to our newsletter and find out all the new stuff that we're coming out with. But you can check all that out at our website. Anyway, thanks, folks, for having tuned in.
Visit our website, AutoLine.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutoLine.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.